Mr. Hyman, would you tell us something about the organization that you're representing here in Kalamazoo this evening, the National Association of Credit Men?
The National Association of Credit Men is an organization that devotes its services exclusively in the field of wholesale, jobbing, banking, and manufacturing credit. We are never concerned too much about the credit of the individual, only indirectly. Our principal concern is the credit of business.
Then your firm must have a pretty close finger on the state of business, large business and small business throughout the country, right?
Yes, we have, I think, more than the average insight into business for this reason. Before much business is transacted, credit inquiries are made, and we can almost chart the flow of business by the credit inquiries we receive.
We hear a lot these days and read a lot about small business versus large business. What's your viewpoint on that?
Well, as a credit man, I can only say this, that I don't believe any man should ever enter a business irrespective of how small it may be in its beginning, but what he has the ambition to see it grow. And if it does grow, then I think he prospers, and so do those who work with him. I think every small businessman wants to grow into a big businessman, and I think you cannot have prosperity in business without both the large and the small business sharing it alike.
Good. We're glad to get that answer, sir. Now, to digress from a moment from business, let's talk about you for a minute. Let's get acquainted with you, sir. You're a native of what part of the country?
Well, oddly enough, I spent most of my life and still maintain my citizenship in Niles, Michigan, even though we reside in New York City.
You're practically at home here, aren't you?
I certainly am, and I have a very great love for the state of Michigan.
Well, it's good to welcome you home, anyway.
Thank you.
Now, getting back to business again, let's hear your viewpoint on the credit conditions of individuals. How do they stack up around the country under present situations?
I would say that the credit of the individual is very sound as of this time. There has been a great deal of talk about they're getting in over their neck on installment buying. But the truth of the matter is that when you consider the total volume of business and the fact that we're dealing in a 50-cent dollar, they are not as yet extended. About the most that could be said with respect to installment credit, which is consumer credit, is that it might bear some slight watching, but it is not yet at dangerous levels.
You would say then that the average man is still pretty solvent.
Not only that, but a half of the families of the United States are without any current debt whatsoever. Another quarter of the families owe less than $500. That is a very remarkable position. In addition to this, they have approximately $138 billion invested in securities, bonds, and bank accounts.
Don't you find in your field of business that there are a great many individuals who are afraid of credit?
Yes, that's because they do not understand it. Quite a number of people do not recognize the fact that credit is a tremendous asset, and that if they build a sound credit, it is worth as much to them as money in the bank, and frequently much more.
Well, now, what happens, Mr. Hyman, when a person just can't pay the bills?
There is only one thing for a person in that condition, one program to follow. It's a very simple program. Let him tell his creditors exactly his position. If he will frankly tell his creditors, they will see him through his emergency. The worst thing he can do is more easily defined. The worst thing he can do is to avoid his creditors or to make a promise that he cannot possibly fulfill. Creditors are not the cold type of individuals that many people represent them to be. If he will simply lay his case before his creditors, he'll find that he'll get every measure of cooperation.
Good. That sounds very encouraging indeed. By the way, we talk a good deal these days here and read a good deal about taxes, higher taxes. Are taxes actually hurting business?
In many fields, they're hurting it and hurting it very badly. Would you like to give me an illustration of exactly how they are hurting it?
Yes, I would.
Not over 10 days ago, I sat with a very high government official and a small handbag manufacturer. This handbag manufacturer suggested to this government official that if the excise tax on handbags were removed, that he would be employing some 4 to 5 times the number of people he were presently employing. Furthermore, he said that the government of the United States would be in receipt of more money. And here was his reason. He said that before the excise tax was levied upon handbags, he paid the government of the United States, on an average, approximately $40,000 a year in taxes. He said presently, if the government got 20% on every bag he manufactured, they would get less than that amount. So he said a courageous tax policy would spur business and would be an incentive to business, and the government, he felt, would not lose by reason of such a policy.
I think that advice might be quite surprising to many of our listeners. What about present and projected security programs? Do you consider them good or bad?
They're all conceived in very worthy ideals and purposes, and no one objects to those. But the mistake is being made that has been made throughout history, namely that an attempt is being made to legislate security. You cannot do it. You must earn security. History is replete with examples of where security has been attempted overnight, where we've tried to reach utopia without actually working our way towards it. And in those instances, it has usually marked the decline of the productivity of a people. I'm opposed to the type of security measure which is not based upon industry and thrift and an earning capacity.
You think, then, that some of these security programs are being abused at the present time?
I certainly do. Let us take the matter of unemployment insurance, which I think is a very worthy thing and is a stabilizing influence. There can be no doubt that it has been racketized quite a bit in recent years, and I think that is very unfortunate because it jeopardizes the whole program when it is administered in that fashion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hyman. We've been talking here in our studios with Mr. Henry H. Hyman, Executive Manager of the National Association of Credit Men, speaking here in Kalamazoo this evening. Mr. Hyman, thanks for joining us here at this conversation. Good luck to you with your meeting and your trips around the country.
Thank you.
Good evening, friends. On these commentaries during the past several months, we have advocated the diplomatic recognition of the communist government in China by the United States. Such a recognition would not have meant that we approved the communist regime there, any more than our recognition of the Soviet government in Russia means that we are in accord with the communist system in that country. As we have stated before, it was long the fixed policy of our country to recognize any government which obtained effective control over a country, whether it came into power by revolution or otherwise. It was a sensible and a practical policy. It worked well for years. It was a sorry day when Woodrow Wilson first departed from it in the case of Mexico. If it had been applied in the case of China, the whole situation in Asia today might well have been far different from what it is. There are some rather clear facts about the Chinese situation which are gradually emerging from the welter of propaganda that has been circulated. One is that the Chinese communists received little or no aid from the Soviet Union until after the war. Another is that the Chinese communist leaders during the war and the immediate post-war period were not dominated by the Russians. That came later. We were told by the most reliable observers in China during the war the kind of corrupt, selfish crew that surrounded Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek. Men like Vinegar Joe Stilwell and even General Marshall himself told us. So did dozens of unbiased newsmen and the rank and file of Americans who were in China. But we paid no heed. We kept pouring American billions into China to help Chiang, and our dollars were simply used to make the rich richer. Our aid found its way into the black market. At this stage, we should have cut off further aid to Chiang Kai-shek unless he cleaned house. Chiang and his advisors, however, counting on the effectiveness of one of the biggest propaganda machines in this country to keep our aid coming, thought we would just continue indefinitely, adding good money to bad. So they either would not or could not get rid of the clique around Chiang Kai-shek. Followed in 1949 the communist sweep over China. Once the communists got control of the country, we should have recognized them, just as the British did. We still had a chance during all those weeks and months that Mao Tse-tung was in Moscow. If he had had any kind of recognition from us, he could have held out against the Russians, but we gave him no hope, and so in the end he surrendered. And in the weeks since that, Soviet military and civil advisors have swarmed into China. It is now too late for us to act, and furthermore, the whole Chinese question has gotten so bogged down in American politics that the administration would not dare to take the political risks involving recognizing the Chinese communists. If we had acted sooner, if we had recognized the Chinese communist government in time, China today would be developing as another Yugoslavia. The communist ranks would have been broken in Asia, just as they have been broken in Europe. the United States could have championed the independence of China against Russian aggression from the North, which always has been our American policy in China. But now it's too late. The Russians have taken over. Our opportunity is lost. This commentator believes that history will record that this episode has been a tragic blunder in American diplomacy. It is a blunder that may make World War III inevitable. Good night.